Ground.
Produced by 2SER and Guardian Australia for the Community Radio Network.
Welcome back to the final episode of Common Ground, Guardian Australia and 2SER's small experiment in listening to four wildly different Australians talk about the really big issues. I'm Lenore Taylor, editor of Guardian Australia. We're ending this experiment with the issue that has probably fueled more political disagreement than any other over the past decade, climate change. And we discovered that while our four participants have got differing views, they aren't nearly as dug into their opposing trenches as our politicians have been.
Okay, I want to start with people to kind of tell me a bit about how they feel about the global scientific consensus on climate change. Do they actually trust that global scientific consensus? So I might start with you, Katrina.
Well, I think that as far as I understand, that the climate science out there is reasonably accurate, and that the contribution of human activity to climate change, that is increased levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, the major contributor is human activity. So I think I accept that science, but a lot of people think it's just the temperatures going up. But what it actually means to me is, and having, you know, read a bit and talked to people a bit, it actually means that with the CO2 increased levels in the atmosphere creates more energy in the atmosphere. So that means that energy has to be expended somehow. So that creates more severe storms, more severe heat waves, etc., etc.
When I've done interviews with farmers before, they tend to talk about volatility, about changeability of everything. It just makes growing things far more unpredictable. So they talk about unpredictability.
Yeah, so we don't have any predictable weather patterns anymore. We just seem to have, we sort of lurch from one crisis to another. It's either too, you know, really, really wet, or then we go through, you know, really severe droughts and heat waves. We had this shocking heat wave last summer, you know, which really, really dries out the country because of the evaporation, you know, from your soils. And it's actually very, very challenging to manage.
Now, Steve, I want your view about this, about whether you accept the scientific view on this, the consensus.
I do, and I guess what informs my view is sort of like a general consensus by credible sources. If there's some sort of a big sort of 200-page document by the CSIRO listing all the data, I certainly don't read it. I probably should, but, you know, I just sort of think, okay, is there a general consensus by a bunch of credible sources? And then I see sort of climate deniers and then sort of being from a not so credible source or from a certain sort of agenda.
Okay, Sharon.
I'm a little sceptical. I think it is there, but I don't think it's as bad as they say it is. And
what creates your scepticism about it?
Oh, watching too much talk back and people. I've seen scientists on TV and they've gone back, you know, 15 years ago and predicted things to be far worse. And they've gone back and just recently I watched this. They've gone back and shown you a expert who said instead of the 1 centimetre that we've measured in Lake Macquarie, it was going to be 30 centimetres and things like that. So there's certainly something in it, but is that the way the world would change too? I don't know.
So you feel that there's the exaggeration that you think might be happening?
Perhaps, yeah.
Is making you think, I'm sceptical, yeah. And Josh, where do you sit on the global scientific consensus on climate change and what influences your views there?
Just evidence, like climate change is absolutely real. And you can see it happening.
But what would you say to Sharon saying, look, there's been a lot of exaggeration on the, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom and apocalypse on the side of the of the yes ledger on the climate change question?
Well, you know, I see a lot, like, I think it's probably a repeated Andrew Bolt talking point, because it's a repeated talking point from my dad. I think Tim Flannery and said something about some place drying up and then it hasn't happened. But the actual prediction was that it would be dried up by 2050, which is a fair way away and still a thing that could come true. So I don't know how much of the exaggeration is actually exaggeration or just a statement being misinterpreted or misrepresented.
Sharon, I'm going to give you a right of reply here. What would you say to Josh?
Who really knows? Honestly, I'm skeptical, but there is something in it, but I don't know. I do wonder if we can really afford to do much about it, though. Like, that's my query with the global warming issue.
So before we start to talk about energy, renewable or not, I just wanted to know from all four of you very quickly, are things like rising energy prices an issue for you in your household? Is that something that you worry about along with, let's say, cost of living or, you know, cost of food?
Absolutely.
It is a big issue for you, Sharon?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely, yeah.
Katrina?
Yeah, sure. And like, we built a new house 7 years ago and we made it solar passive, so we don't have to use the sun to heat our house in winter, and like, we live in a cold climate.
Steve and Josh, electricity price is an issue. Josh, you might have to speak for your parents here rather than you, but Steve, electricity prices are concerned.
I am ashamed to say that it's not too much of a concern for me. I think it should be, but it's not. I'm just living the kind of a sort of young single male life, you know, where you're just sort of not being responsible with your money and your bills and all that sort of thing.
Josh, do your parents ever complain about electricity prices?
It keeps going up, which is a problem. I won't be able to speak more personally for this until maybe the end of this year. Then I can give you my personal experience. But until then, I'll just have to take their word for it.
So you live in the Latrobe Valley, and Hazelworld shut its doors earlier this year. It was described as probably the dirtiest coal-fired power plant in Australia, wasn't it, at the time? I'm interested in your view about the closure of that power plant and your view when you look, not just your own view, but as you look around your community, what is your position on coal-fired power plants?
Well, something that got overlooked in a lot of the coverage about Hazelwood was why it closed. And, you know, you had the coalition and, you know, pundits on TV talking about, oh, the Greens shut down Hazelwood or Daniel Andrews shut down Hazelwood. But it was, the thing to remember is that it was an economic decision. The company that owned Hazelwood decided that it wasn't profitable to run it anymore, which is why they decided to shut it down. It wasn't because they were concerned about pressure for environmental groups. They didn't really care. But when it became economically unsuitable, they axed it. And I think a lot of us in the Valley are understanding now that coal is just not the economical way forward anymore. Nowadays, it's cheaper per megawatt hour to be looking into. I think it's that wind, it's either wind or solar is already cheaper per megawatt hour than coal. And then whichever one it isn't cheaper than is going to be very soon. So basically, a lot of us have accepted that, and we don't really care if it's coal that's the next. We don't care as long as we get to generate the electricity. We don't care what it's being generated from.
When you say we in the community, have you not seen any downside from the plant closing? So people losing their jobs or... you know, money coming out of
the community. Of course, there's a downside. You see, businesses are closing a lot faster than they used to. We always had that problem, but now it's being accelerated a lot. So while we're upset that it's being closed, it's less the closure of the plant and more the fact that it closed without any kind of preparation put into it, without any kind of work put into it. So the actual story I heard from some of the miners I was talking to is kind of phenomenal, if I'm remembering this right, it was that they all got a text message one day saying, oh, we're going to have a meeting in the mine. And they went down in the mine where they'd set up like this temporary tent pavilion. And they all went in and then they said, in a few months, none of you are going to have a job. So get your affairs in order and get ready for that. And that was the level of warning they had, despite them being told it was going to run until, like, I think 2022 or 2025. One of those.
I'm interested about getting everybody's reaction to Josh's story and really your view about where coal sits today and whether we should, you know, keep investing in coal in Australia. I'm going to go to you, Katrina.
Well, look, part of Australia's prosperity has occurred because of selling coal, you know, exporting coal overseas to other nations. But on the other hand, everything's always changing in economies. It's like, you know, when the Industrial Revolution came and the motor car came and, you know, that changed the whole of society. And at the moment, like, as Josh said, there is a move to renewable energies because it's becoming economically profitable to do so. And there are private investors out there now keen on developing wind farms and solar farms all over the place because it is cheaper per megawatt hour to provide power from that source than it is from coal. And that's just going to happen. I think solar and wind is going to become cheaper, and so it's going to be the economics that drives it. I don't like the thought of, I mean, everyone thinks that, you know, emitting all the coal, you know, the gas, coal-fired gas into the atmosphere is contributing to the increased levels of CO2, which it is. And so, you know, we have to address that issue and whether we can do anything about it or not. But we also don't want to send the country broke in the process. I mean, I think most people would want to retain their standard of living. And if all our coal-fired plants were shut down overnight, what would happen to our economy?
So, Katrina, before I go to you, Sharon, Katrina, I just want to put this to you. A lot of climate change experts would say we're not making the transition quick enough, that we might have to make some sacrifice in terms of, you know, cost of energy and lifestyle in the short term to avoid catastrophe in the long term. What's your view about that?
Oh, well, I guess it depends on the will of the people. It depends on how many people are going to put their hands up and say, I'm prepared to make a sacrifice. Most people aren't. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, everyone votes with a hip pocket, usually. It's, you know, you can be altruistic and think, you know, that's a fabulous thing to do and let's do it for the winner, say, but it's going to cost you. They say, oh, well, I'm no longer interested. You know, I think that's the way, that's human nature.
Sharon, you talked a bit before about this very issue, about saying that there is something in it, but you're a bit sceptical. Mm-hmm. But you said, you know, the country can't afford it. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Well, it's my understanding that coal power and electricity is cheaper. The alternates haven't got cheaper yet. They're a long way from that. I think we're a bit early. I think we still need a fair bit of coal-powered fuel energy for a bit yet until we fine-tune it. I don't think the planning's been done well enough. I mean, look at South Australia.
Steve, I'm going to go to you. I mean, you've said to us before that you tend to vote Green on and agree with them on most issues. Is the stuff around renewable energy and, you know, the end of coal a part of why you want to vote Green?
That would be a reason for environmental issues. It's kind of what you guys are saying reminded me of how I was on a surf trip once in Lombok in Indonesia. I was riding up this hill and there was this big sort of giant tent set up with this sort of a little makeshift conveyor belt and a whole pile of rocks. And I was riding with a local guy and another Australian guy. And the local guy said, oh, yeah, it's, you know, it's gold mining. So they just pull up a big pile of rocks and they sell the whole bags of rocks and someone can come buy it and it's a bit like gambling. You know, they crack open the rocks to see if there's any gold inside and that sort of thing. And I said, wow, they're selling big bags of rocks. And the other guy, Jesse, the Australian, goes, hey, that's all we do in Australia. We sell big bags of rocks, you know. that happened. So what I would really love to see is us move out of selling big bags of rocks, you know, and more towards green energy, manufacturing and service sector and that sort of thing, which I think the Greens are in favour of that sort of thing. But I imagine, like you were saying, people vote with their, you know, their hip pockets and that sort of thing. So the government has to actively make other things look more attractive than big bags of rocks, you know, has to actively invest a lot of money, which would involve, you know, sort of slumps in the economy and that sort of thing, I imagine.
That's the thing, though. People worried about cost. If we're worried about costs, then we should be just building new. We should be building new wind farms. We should be building new solar panels. Because I got the statistics here just while you were talking, I googled them. Wind is currently $64 per megawatt hour, and solar is $78. They're both expected to drop to around $50 per megawatt hour soon. And then for coal, that's $80 per megawatt hour. And if you take into account other factors like finance risk, then that actually goes up. And at the moment, we...
Where have you found... Sorry, Josh, where did you find these this material? So Google's probably not enough for us.
A study from the Australian National University. This was released...
Right, we know whereabouts?
This was released back in February.
Right. Okay, when you hear something like that, Sharon... does it change your mind at all, or are you still skeptical?
Oh, look, I'm all for green energy, don't get me wrong, but I just think we probably need to plan it better, and I think it needs to be a combination of. There's a lot of work being done over at Newcastle Uni, and they've got these solar panels. They reckon they can make them for about $10, $15 a panel. They're like a stick-on thing. They're probably 2 years away. Like, things like that, that's the sort of thing... I think we need more before, well, we've already taken a lot of the coal away anyway, the coal power away, but I just think it was done too early, and I think we will still probably need a combination. But I also don't understand how we can sell it to other countries. They've got all this clean coal, which reduces, I don't know how the science behind it, how it works, but we're selling it overseas, and then, but we're not doing it here because of the environment. Why can't we do the clean coal? No, I don't know the science behind it, but I keep hearing it brought up, this clean coal.
Yes, you're right. So I've got a definition Miles has just given me here. Clean coal refers to carbon capture technology, which is designed to collect and dispose of coal plants' carbon dioxide emissions before they escape into the atmosphere. So it's kind of like, you know, when your partner farts, but he puts it under he has it under the doona. And he says it's not so bad. It's okay, but it's still there. It's still there. It's still there. where they trap heat.
Dirty.
That's right. That technology may be on the drawing board and in a few small-scale demonstration projects, but it's not close to being ready for widespread use. So it's something that they're trialing at the moment. So
our timing's all out. You know, we should.
Right.
Yeah.
You know why our timing is bad? It's because we're relying on, you know, it's the transition to 100% renewables or even 90% renewables, 50%. It doesn't matter. But the transition to that requires a lot of coordination. And it is really hard to get that kind of coordination when you have a very, like, this strange behemoth of different little monopolies formed by the market and by privatization of energy. And that's when the Valley's problems really started. It started when the SEC was privatized by Kennedy in the 90s.
Okay, I want to just, there's a couple of other things. First of all, before I ask my other questions, I wonder, Katrina, Sharon and Josh have been speaking a while on this. Is there anything that either you, Steve, or you, Katrina, want to say in response to Sharon and Josh's comments?
Well, just a couple of things. Katrina here. First of all, we have huge uranium reserves in this country. No one's mentioned uranium. It's a very clean energy.
I imagine you're right that nuclear is a lot cleaner and better source than coal. But I kind of feel like is nuclear, like, you know, to my understanding, it takes like 10 years to build a nuclear power station and a lot goes into that. So would nuclear become like the, like, you know, sort of the Blu-ray of the energy sector, in a sense? Can you collect, get it together, collect all the DVDs, there's something else that's not sweet already out, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. Katrina, I'm actually interested in both Sharon and Josh's view about whether nuclear provides a bridge between where we are now and where we might want to be.
I think Katrina and Steve were both right here, because Steve's right that building nuclear plants takes a long time and it is hideously expensive. So we're better off just building renewables. But what Katrina was saying about exporting uranium, I don't really disagree, because I think that exporting uranium to countries that have already built nuclear power plants is a good idea, to partly replace the coal market.
Sharon, have you ever thought about nuclear as part of the energy mix?
I always have a vision of Homer Simpson and his bright green, everything lit up when I think of it. So I think it's something that they will have to think about. I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a combination. It probably should be a combination of a lot of things, but I think I would be open to it, yeah, if I can get past Homer Simpson, yeah.
One of the big problems with uranium is everyone, you know, most people are willing to say, yeah, I guess, build a new nuclear plant, but then you say, all right, and it's going near your town. Then they say, whoa, hang on, I didn't mean here.
We're going to end with a hypothetical. I'm the Prime Minister of Australia, and I'm saying to you that we could make a transition to 100% renewable energy in the next 5 years. But your electricity price, your price for energy would need to be increase. How much would you be prepared to bear in an increase in your energy prices to make a transition, make that transition? 0%, 5%, 10%, 20%?
I'd be zero.
So Sharon, it'd have to be a zero-sum game for you?
I wouldn't believe anything my Prime Minister says anyway.
Sharon, for you, this transition to renewable energy has to be cost you nothing.
I would say, yeah, you can't get blood out of a stone. It's not just the electricity. They've chipped away and chipped away and chipped away and chipped away at everything else, you know. So, yeah, I don't think there's much compromise left with the Australian public, to be honest.
Katrina, are you prepared to pay a bit more for energy for this magical fairy dust?
Yes, maybe, but like, I think people and, you know, lower incomes and things, they always get, you know, they find it really tough, and I don't think it's fair to expect them to pay for an increase in you know, electricity prices so we can go to renewables when they are already struggling with their budgets. I mean, I just...
But what about you? I mean, what I'm trying to get is how much you're prepared to sacrifice personally.
Well, our electricity bill, and we have very few lights on at night, so is about $3,000 a year. And so maybe I'll be prepared to have an increase of 10%.
Okay.
If it was going to make the change quicker and it wasn't going to affect the economy too much. So you've got to make sure that the country's not going to go into recession or something. I mean, I think it's such a hypothetical question that without any detail, that it's very hard to answer.
I'd go the full 100%. If it was a genuine commitment to switching over to renewable energy, I'd most happily double my power bill, but at the same token, I don't have the same commitments that everyone else does, you know. So it's okay for me. If I was thinking for the rest of the Australian population, something that was sort of palatable, you know, I'd be thinking more like 25% or something like that.
Josh?
Yeah, that, like Katrina said, that's the problem with hypotheticals, is it's never either or in real life. But you know, I've seen the electricity bills, and I guess I'd take, you know, 50%. I could probably manage that once I'm living alone. But yeah, I don't think, you know, you've got low income people, you've got a lot to consider there. So for, I think 25%, like Steve said, for everyone, but for me, I'd be willing to take, the 50% or even the 100% probably.
So that was our last conversation with our four participants, which I'm going to kind of miss it really. But it was interesting in that I think if you put four politicians from completely different ends of the spectrum in a room and ask them to talk about climate change and energy, it'd be a much more polarised debate than that.
They'd be at each other's throats.
They were, our participants all more or less accepted that climate change was happening. Sharon possibly less so, wasn't sure, but not entirely dismissive. And they were quite willing to engage in a conversation about what we should do and how much more they should pay. I thought it was a really good discussion.
Yeah, and that kind of, at least level of consensus that climate change is real and happening, is reflected in all the statistical data. While there are, you know, it goes up and down, most of the trusted quantitative research on this shows that the vast majority of Australians think that climate change is happening. Where they're divided is what do we do about it and who pays for that. So even when you look at something like should we be investing more in renewable energy, we've seen even, you know, big percentages of people who live in Malcolm Turnbull and Tony Abbott's electorate still think that renewables is something we should invest in. But then there's where it breaks down is, you know, how serious is the threat, and is the threat serious enough for me to be as a consumer paying more for electricity prices?
But there did seem to be a consensus that change in electricity generation would happen one way or another.
Yes, and again, it's about how you make that transition. So we've For the electorate rather than for politics, the question is not climate change real or not. The question is how do we make this transition and who pays and is the pain short-term pain for long-term gain, or is there going to be a long tail for us to be able to adapt? So, and that was reflected in the conversations, absolutely.
So that was our last conversation for this little experiment with Common Ground. Thank you so much for being a participant and leading the conversations, Rebecca.
Thank you.
And we're really grateful to Katrina and Sharon and Josh and Steve for giving up their time and for giving us their views each week. Thanks to Rebecca Huntley, our podcast editor, Miles Martignoni, and our collaborators at 2SER, Emma Lancaster, Taylor Fuller, Miles Herbert and Emma Rappaport.
Common Ground is heard on your local station through the Community Radio Network.
Let's enjoy new stuff, old stuff, a real variety.
My pleasure.
And yay!
2SER 107.3.
Don't stay.